This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. I was outside this morning and looked up and saw three or four birds hawking insects. In this instance, hawking refers to birds sallying forth from a perch to catch an insect and then sallying back to the perch. Sally forth. There was a small group together. When I see that kind of companionship and insect hunting activity, I think pretty quickly to cedar waxwings. When they're around, I love to pay attention to them. And it's a really good thing to have binoculars because they're one of the prettiest birds you'll ever lay eyes on. And then I thought, well, this would be a perfect program. I'd love cedar waxwings. I don't know that much about them. And so I started diving in. I went to All About Birds, the Cornell Lab of Ornithology site, and I also went to Birds of the World. That's the site that costs $50 a year, produced by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology and written by the top researchers. All About Birds is derived from that work. And I learned that they're late nesters, and they actually feed their young a lot of fruit. And that made me think of goldfinches, because goldfinches also are late nesters, and they feed their young almost no insects at all. In fact, if a goldfinch baby gets an insect, it's almost a mistake. Goldfinches love to eat thistles, which is unheard of in the bird world. Insects are the wholesome form of protein that birds raise their young on. That's why we worry quite a bit about the decline of the insect populations, because so many animals rely on insect nutrition. So here's two birds that go against that truism. So I'll tell you a little bit about them, and I'll tell you more about the cedar waxwings. And they're so beautiful, and there's such odd reason why. They're called waxwings because if you see some great pictures, look at All About Birds for some terrific pictures of cedar waxwings. The tips of their secondaries have a protruding, waxy, bright red, narrow teardrop-shaped tips. And when they fold their wings, you see that lovely layer of red. I'm going to start reading from Bent's Life Histories. Back in the 30s, this series of Life Histories of Birds of North America was published by Arthur Cleveland Bent. You can find it online at a website called birdsbybent.com. And you can also get Dover reprints of these accounts if you look online. They provide such an interesting view of birds from more than 100 years ago. The beginning of the cedar waxwing in Bent is terrific, so I'm going to start by reading it. Cedar waxwings impress us as being unlike most of the birds we know. We see them commonly in flocks or small companies through the greater part of the year, but we never know just when they will appear or how numerously, for the movements of these flocks do not conform to the regular northern and southern swings of migration that the majority of North American birds make to and from their breeding grounds. Moreover, unlike most birds, there is no close relationship between the time of their arrival on their nesting grounds and the commencement of breeding. When we become well acquainted with the waxwing, we look upon him as the perfect gentleman of the bird world. There is in him a refinement of deportment and dress. His voice is gentle and subdued. He is quiet and dignified in manner, sociable, never quarrelsome, and into one of his habits, that of sharing food with his companions, we may read without too much stress of imagination the quality of politeness, almost unselfishness, very rare, almost unheard of in the animal kingdom. His plumage is delicate in coloring, soft, quiet browns, grays, and pale yellow, set off like a carnation in our buttonhole, by a touch of red on the wing. Alexander Wilson, writing of this attractive decoration, says, "Six or seven, and sometimes the whole nine, secondary feathers of the wings are ornamented at the tips with small red oblong appendages resembling red sealing wax. These appear to be a prolongation of the shafts and to be intended for preserving the ends and consequently the veins of the quills from being broken and worn away by the almost continual fluttering of the bird among thick branches of the cedar. The feathers of those birds which are without these appendages are uniformly found ragged on the edges, but smooth and perfect in those on whom the marks are full and numerous." Unquote. Spring begins late with cedar waxwings, for although many move northward into New England in January and February and often linger for weeks, sometimes in great numbers, attracted by a plentiful supply of food, these apparently are merely wandering flocks. The breeding birds of the transition zone, the real spring birds, do not arrive, it is thought, until well into May, and even then they do not start nesting until long afterward. And the courtship cedar birds spend so great a portion of the year gathered together in flocks, and when thus assembled, contrary to the custom of most birds, pay so much attention to one another that it is often difficult to decide whether to regard some of their actions as indicating courtship or to consider them an expression of the comradeship or courtesy that seems to pervade their behavior. The passing of a berry back and forth between two birds or along a line of birds, a procedure we may watch sometimes even in winter, may have developed from courtship feeding, and the delicate little dance in which one of two birds hops close to the side of the other, then takes one short hop away and back again, over and over, may have its origin in courting behavior developed in an unusually social species, although the dance may take place long before the breeding season. And I'm going to interrupt again and say that if you look at All About Birds, they have a video of this dance. It's a lot of fun to see. My husband saw a line of cedar waxwings in a branch extending over the Wisconsin River. There were a group of cedar waxwings, one next to the other, next to the other, next to the other. They were passing grapes, one to the next, to the next, to the next, and another grape next to the one next, to the one next. He actually saw it happening. And back to Bent's life histories. In 1911, Carolyn M. Stevens writes, "Coming through an apple orchard one noontime in May 1909, I stopped to watch a large flock of cedar waxwings feeding on the apple blossom petals, and then it was my good fortune to see as pretty a sight as could be imagined among birds. The attention of the birds seemed about evenly divided between eating petals and playing a sort of game. Looking from tree to tree, I saw it going on all around me. It was a game for two. One bird, taking the initiative, with a petal in its mouth, suddenly flew to his chosen playmate, alighting close beside him on the twig, at the same instant offering the petal, once it was a bit of green leaf. The other bird, though apparently taken unawares, was quick enough to catch it on the instant it was offered. Immediately with the petal, he hopped sideways, just one small hop away from the first bird. After a pause of perhaps a second, back he came, close to the bird and offering the petal, which the first bird on an instant caught from his bill, hopped away with it, just one hop, paused a second, then very suddenly hopped back, offering the petal, all just as the other bird had done. And so they passed the petal back and forth, not three or four times, but 12 and 15 times until, tiring of the play, they flew apart, or the petal, with much hasty snatching from bill to bill, becoming tattered and too small for use, was indifferently eaten by one of the birds. In the moments of pause before the always sudden reoffering of the petal, each bird looked straight ahead, the one with the petal as if trying to conceal from the other the instant he meant to come back with it. and the one awaiting the pedal, as if the rules of the game forbade his watching to see when it was coming. Yet he was plainly tense and watchful, and only once did I see a bird fail to get the pedal. In that instance, the other bird gave him another chance at it when he got it all right, and the game continued. But for this element of competition, this apparent keenness to take the other bird unawares, which gave the spirit of a sport to the performance, it would have more the aspect of a dance, for it was measured, dignified, and dainty, with the quality of an old-time minuet. Certainly, throughout the time I watched, it had no observable connection with courtship. However indirectly the mating season may be responsible for it, the choosing of a partner seemed wholly casual and disinterested, and when the game palled, the birds separated as casually. Wonderful writing in Bent's Life Histories about the cedar waxwings. Oh, what people had time to observe, and what I hope we all do too. I was eager to see the more modern interpretation of the waxy tips of the secondaries, and so I'll read from All About Birds under Cool Facts about the cedar waxwing. The name waxwing comes from the waxy red secretions found on the tips of the secondaries of some birds. The exact function of these tips is not known, but they may help attract mates. And something else that's very interesting about our modern day, cedar waxwings with orange instead of yellow tail tips began appearing in the northeastern United States and southeastern Canada in the 1960s. The orange color is the result of a red pigment picked up from the berries of an introduced species of honeysuckle. If a waxwing eats enough of the berries while it is growing a tail feather, the tip of the feather will be orange. The cedar waxwing is one of the few North American birds that specializes in eating fruit. It can survive on fruit alone for several months. Brown-headed cowbirds that are raised in cedar waxwing nests typically don't survive, in part because the cowbird chicks can't develop on such a high fruit diet. Because they eat so much fruit, cedar waxwings occasionally become intoxicated or even die when they run across overripe berries that have started to ferment and produce alcohol. And because I'm fascinated with the fact that cedar waxwings are not known for feeding insects to young, I was eager to read the part in Birds of the World about the feeding of young. Picking up halfway through the long description of their breeding, the female may occasionally leave the nest to forage, but generally the male delivers food to the female during incubation. After eggs hatch, the behavior of the male changes. He delivers food more often, and he brings insects instead of fruit. Fly-catching activity is conspicuous near the nest. Nestlings are fed for the first time, usually within 2 hours of hatching. First feeding may be attempted as early as 20 minutes after the nestlings hatch. In southeast Ontario, fruits of red osier dogwood, choke cherries, and blackberries are frequently fed to nestlings. During the first 1 to 2 days after the hatch, nestlings are fed mostly insects. Subsequently, they are fed mostly fruit. Nestlings are fed whole fruits, even as early as day one. Proportion of fruit fed to nestlings appears to increase with age. Older nestlings are fed predominantly fruit, and nestlings near fledging age are fed almost entirely fruit. The ability of young to develop on diets dominated by low-protein sugary fruits suggests physiological mechanisms associated with specialization to sugary fruit diet. I love things that are different, that go against the norm. I love to compare the cedar waxwing with the American goldfinch, who nest late in the season. They're starting to nest now, and they eat thistles, and under feeding and parental care, this is from Birds of the World, all food is provided in a form of a sticky semi-solid mass, primarily of seeds, regurgitated by the parents. If a cowbird egg is placed in a goldfinch nest, they say that it won't survive. It cannot live on thistle alone. Mostly the cowbirds are gone by the time these birds are nesting. Under the section called feeding, the main foods taken for the goldfinch, seeds of many annual plants, small seeds of various tree species, prefer black thistle among feeder seeds, but will take sunflowers. Insects only as encountered. In Bent's Life Histories, the goldfinch section, I found one of my favorite ornithologists quoted here, Alexander Scutch, who I've read about in Costa Rica, a friend of the Hammerstroms, gives the following interesting account of the building of the nest by the female goldfinch and of the subsequent life of the pair at the nest. On July 31, 1931, I watched a goldfinch building a nest about 9 feet above the ground on a horizontal limb of a young white pine growing beside a road near Ithaca, New York. The outer shell had apparently been completed, but the lining was still lacking. Between 8:30 and 9:50 a.m., the female brought material 8 times. Although the male accompanied her, he did not help to build. First, she flew up with long fibers that trailed behind her in the air. While sitting in the nest to work them into the lining, she made a continual sweet chirping, answering the calls of her mate, who rested not far off. When this material had been arranged to her satisfaction, she flew away and found a white cocoon case of a spider. After settling in the nest, she stuck it to the outer surface and then took it again in her bill while she rotated to the left, applied it to another spot on the outer surface, took it up anew and rotated farther to the left, placed it on the outside and took it up again, and so on until she had made a complete circuit of the nest. As she moved the cocoon from place to place, some of the silky threads adhering to the first point of attachment were drawn out to the second, from the second to the third, and so on. Thus, the strands of cobweb were drawn over the surface of the nest and helped to bind together the materials of which it was composed. Next, the female goldfinch brought a great billful of silky thistle down and deposited it in the interior of the nest. Sitting in the cup, she proceeded to shape it to her breast. She sank down into the ample hollow until only her tail and the top of her head were visible to me above the rim. From the vibratory movements of her body, I inferred that she kneaded the materials with her feet, which of course were hidden from view. In all these operations, she generally rotated to the left or counterclockwise. Whenever her mate was near, she chirped prettily to him without interrupting her labors. At a neighboring nest, the male goldfinch, who usually escorted his mate when she brought material for the structure, once carried a billfill to it, but hardly took the time to arrange it there. Between July 13 and August 3, I found in the neighborhood of Ithaca 8 occupied nests, all in roadside trees, except one that had been built at the outside. Here's another quote from Alexander Scutch under the heading of food for the goldfinch. This is way before the breeding season. All through the third week of April 1931, large flocks of goldfinches were present in the woods near my parents' house on the outskirts of Baltimore. Here they fed in the elm trees, which at this period were green with their clustered keys, as though with an earlier and transient foliage. There was more music in their confiding call notes than in many a bird's song. Hanging head downward from the slender elm twigs, the goldfinches plucked the winged fruits, not, so far as I could learn, to eat the small green embryos, but to extract a little white larva about a millimeter in length, which infested many of the fruits and caused them to take on an abnormal, irregularly swollen aspect. The birds deftly bit the larvae out of the husks and then let the keys flutter to the ground until large quantities were strewn beneath the trees where they had been feeding. So there they are going after insects. If these birds interest you, I highly recommend allaboutbirds.org, a wonderful website produced by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology, and also birdsbybent.com. And if you want to delve deeper, Birds of the World, another terrific website produced by the Cornell Lab of Ornithology. It's fun to see the mysteries that people have observed. Be sure to go to All About Birds and see the photographs of the cedar waxwing and those red waxy of the ends of their secondaries. This is Maggie Jones and Natural Wonders. Thank you so much for listening.